and they had bought a Murray 48-inch cut lawnmower, had a huge yard. He wanted to pull it down to his mama's. Her name was Nanny Frank. He wanted to pull it down to her house to get a man to come by to work on it because he was ashamed to ask him to come to his house because he didn't buy it from him. It was a piece of clothesline handy, and he just wrapped it around that ball. He had a Chevrolet one-ton truck. He wrapped it around, made a half hitch in there. Said, "Traveling, get over here and pull me over to Nanny Frank."
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hayden Alabama Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm David.
I'm Grant.
I'm Robin.
And I'm Heavy.
Well, it's round two in Philadelphia, Mississippi. We've been setting up for a while, and I'm not going to lie about it, but it's going to be totally worth it. We've got stories lined up, lessons learned, funny, all kinds of things, but we've been excited about driving back over because this is really one of the marks of the show. So we're going to get out of the way. We're going to let these boys, they've been chomping at the bit to tell some stories. So we're going to get out of the way. And David, we're going to ask you to lead us off.
Great. Well, when I was a kid growing up, we lived across the road from my great uncle. And one Saturday, they had a work day on the cows. And all the relatives from lived around the neighborhood, big family, they came over to help. Got there early in the morning. And one of them, or two of them, was her cousin Hillary and his son Billy Caperton. Hillary brought a sack of tomatoes with him. They worked all morning, and at lunchtime they all came to the old farmhouse, got around the big oak table, and crowded in, and a big platter on the table was peeled and sliced tomatoes, just mounded over. And everybody went to eating, and they were bragging on Hillary's tomatoes. And they said, man, they were good and they were juicy, and everybody just, you know, was eating. About halfway through the meal, my cousin Fred, he said, "Hillary, I didn't know y'all had a garden this year." And Hillary said, "We don't." He said, "These vines just come out natural in the corner of that lot we're using behind the house for an outhouse." And when he said that, everybody just sort of stopped eating. You know, it was like
Bad fertilizer.
You want to be selective of where you get your fertilizer from. What's the But it does make a difference when it's an animal versus a human.
But does it?
For some reason, it does to me.
Does to me.
It does to you as well.
It does to me.
I have scruples.
You what now?
I have a few scruples.
That's it. Well, Grunt, we're going to go down the line. You said earlier that you have one from you taking his son, Jake. Tell us that one.
Yes. But Jake and I have always been close. I mean, he's hunted me since he was 4 years old. But one morning, we hadn't roosted a turkey, but we'd seen a gobbler in a big bottom. He'd done crossed it and got on the hills. So we were going to go there the next morning. Had to get there early because I knew he was going to be roosting in the edge of the swamp and fly down in this bottom. Well, Jake brought one of his buddies with him. He'd never killed a turkey. So me and his buddy was going to hunt together, and Jake was going to hunt. Well, there was a gate going in this place, and you had to get out and open. And Jake, being the cowboy he is, he let his buddy sit next to the door to open the gate. Well, we pulled up there way before daylight. Jake told the boy, "Get out and open the gate." I forget his name.
Dylan.
Well, he got out, opened the gate. I pulled through with a truck. I looked back in my rearview mirror, and I says, "Jake, how smart is that old boy back there?" He says, "He ain't too smart, Paul. Why?" I said, "Well, he has shut the gate, but he's standing on the other side of it." Long story short, we went on, and the boy did kill the turkey.
You just had to get him on the right side of things.
Yeah. He was complicated there, you know, about the gate. But
had a little richer in him.
Well, I'm sure he did. All
right. Who over there wants to explain to the audience exactly how you knew that Jake was a little bit more of a cowboy than...
When Jake got in the middle, Jake knew there was a gate there.
There
the boy
you go.
Didn't. And Jake didn't want to get out and open the gate, so he said, "You sit by the door."
That's
the doorman.
That's the doorman. It's the gate man. Yeah, that's the way it goes down here.
There's an old song about that, isn't there?
I don't know. Probably is, but ain't there ought to be.
Said, if you saw three cowboys and they's all dressed the same, exactly the same, riding the truck, how in the world would you tell which one was real cowboy? And the young man says, "I don't think there's any way to know." And he said, "Oh, yeah, there's a way to know.
Oh, yeah.
Real cowboy sits in the middle.
Sits in the middle.
He ain't got to drive, and he ain't got to mess with the gate."
That's right.
Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
I got two dear friends in this world named Bud, and his wife is really named Traveline. And she's a sweetheart. I love her to death. Can cook the best caramel cake I ever put in my mouth. And she has loved on me and my family. And her name is Traveline. And Bud is one of the hardest workers I've ever been around. He's 80 now, but I'll guarantee you he could throw more square hay bales right now than any of us probably could. Hardest working man I've ever seen. You heard sloshing in your boots. Works hard. Your feet sweat so much it sounds like squish, squish, squish. I've seen him do that. And Bud took a hammer and knocked every piece of every safety feature off every piece of equipment he ever had. He was in a hurry all the time.
My man.
He'd take him big long steps. And one day he was in the yard and they had bought a Murray 48-inch cut lawnmower, had a huge yard. And he wanted to pull it down to his mama's. Her name was Nanny Frank. And it wanted to pull it down to her house to get a man to come by to work on it because he was ashamed to ask him to come to his house because he didn't buy it from him. So it was a piece of clothesline handy. And he just wrapped it around that ball. He had a Chevrolet one-ton truck. He wrapped it around, made a half hitch in there. Said, "Traveling, get over here and pull me over to Nanny Frank." And he tied that lawnmower up, and Trav thought, as long as I'm on this driveway, I need to go slow. But when I get out there on that county road, I need to speed up. Bud thought, "Let's go, let's go, let's go." And they were going down the driveway, "Bud, huh? Go ahead, go ahead, go ahead." When they hit that county road, Traveline got in that Chevrolet. She let the big dog eat. And Bud was back there going 40 on that Murray, trying to drive her. Bud said, to my horror, she slammed on the brakes and whooped in at Nanny Frank's. And Bud said, "I just held her true, Reverend." It would have been a calamity if he'd had one of them nylon toe straps. So. But that clothesline broke, and that Murray made tumble. If Bud wouldn't have been a tougher man as he is, it'd have killed me. Bud was taking more long steps. He's going to chew Traveline out. Anybody ain't got enough sense. He's taking more long steps. He got up there, and Traveline let that window down just a little bit, said, "Bud, if I'm going to pull you, you got to follow me. And she loaded that glass back up and went on to Nanny Frank.
Oh. My favorite part. He said, to my horror, what did you, she took a turn.
She turned right into Nanny Frank.
Yeah, she turned right in Nanny Frank's driveway. Bud back there doing 40 on that mirror.
And you said he tied a clothesline is what he tethered himself to.
Old metal cable clothesline.
That's a great idea.
It was a great idea until it wasn't.
Yes, exactly right.
It was handy.
Right, yeah. That's usually some of the tools that I use, too.
Come on, let's go to Nanny Frank's.
A few years back, I was beaver trapping, but I was supposed to be in church. Sunday school more specifically because somebody else was going to speak. But I thought on it, and I couldn't stand it. The beaver traps won out. Anyhow, I got up early that morning, about 4 or 5 o'clock, and drove off up there, unloaded my Ranger and went to running traps. Seemed like I had caught a couple, and I went over on the Noxubee River, which is like the northern boundary to the property we lease. And it had been high, but it had fell a lot in the last 2 days. They were crawling up out of that river and eating green grass out there on the power line, a pipeline. Anyhow, I come up there and I could see, yeah, I've got one. I can't see the beaver, but the trap's gone. So I just put my Ranger in neutral, hopped off, went over there and looked, and it was a huge, about a 60-pound, 50 or 60-pound beaver. Had gotten a trap and he was dead, but before he died, he had worked the stakes loose and he was laying down there next to the water. Well, I was going to go down there and get him, throw him in the Ranger and call it a day. It's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I started down there to him, and that bank was awful slippery from where the water had been up. I didn't take that into consideration. My feet's shot out from under me, and I went in that cold water. And it wasn't real deep after the water had went down. It's probably 7 foot, enough it float my hat. But I had on hip boots, and I come up, and there was an old snag over there, and an old log or stump or something. I got my arm around it. And, man, I've had cold water survival training right then. I could see the onset of hypothermia. I said, I got to get out of this water. So there's a boat landing about 100 yards down the river. I knew that. I knew there was a cable ladder that I could grab a hold to help me out of the water. But I was afraid I'd cramp and drown before I could swim or float down there. First, I had to get them dang hip boots off. They was trying to drown me. They're full of water. Big as my foot is, that's 5 gallons of water in each foot. Anyhow, they wouldn't come off. I had a suction. So I took my knife and I cut them off. I was down to my sock feet. Well, I swam over there to the bank then. It wasn't far, about from here to you fellas, maybe closer. The problem was that bank was so steep and so slick, I couldn't get back up. I tore that whole side of the river up trying to get. I was getting exhausted, and I hadn't warmed up any. I mean, I had done got the jerks. Well, I had a piece of cord about 8 or 10 feet long in my coat pocket, and I took it, and I tied my wrist to a snag there on the bank. If I die down here, my family, somebody will be able to find me. I thought about it just a minute, and I jerked that rope. I ain't dying down here. And I had done a little bit of praying before, so I learned that I could dig my fingers in and claw that sand down and make me a ramp and get closer to the top. I thought I was close enough, and I tried to jump up and grab a willow sapling up there. Didn't quite make it. I was about all in. And I said, Lord, I know I don't deserve to live another second. But please let me get back home, see my family again. But then I said, it's your will. If you want me to, I know I'll make it. If you don't, I won't. I squatted down there, and I come up that bank like a spike buck. I took a lunge and grabbed that willow tree, and I was an old man then. I was probably 60 or 61, and I got out of there. That ranger's still running, still idling. After 2.5 hours, I'd come closer to my killing, but I was a lot younger then. It didn't scare me as bad. But the moral of the story, lessons learned, begin with, don't put going to fishing or trapping ahead of going to church. Go on to church like you're supposed to do. Let somebody know where you're going. See, as it was, my wife, she would have eventually called some of these guys, and they'd have flew up to camp looking for me, but it might have been a day or two because she was used to me being gone a day or two at a time. So let people know where you're going.
If you're thinking about selling your timber, I know a guy. When Andrew Laughlin called me, I quickly realized that his main concerns were standing by people's side and helping them avoid regret when making a once-in-a-lifetime decision. Andrew is a small-town Alabama guy, family man, and second-generation forester. Laughlin Forest Management specializes in timber sales, management plans, reforestation, and all things private land management. Do not let that log skidder near your property before you give Andrew a call at 334-804-7490.
All right, Mr. David, we've heard from Heavy. Now it's your turn again, so tell us another one.
Well, I'll tell one about my daddy. Came back one weekend to see my mom and daddy. They were sitting in a den. Daddy motioned for me to have a seat. He said, well, I'm going to tell you something. And my mama gave him the little unspoken. You could tell she didn't want him to tell me nothing. He said, well, I've had a little scare. He said, I looked down at my belly button, and I had a growth. I had a tumor. He got him an appointment with an oncologist at University Medical Center in Jackson. So him and mama went down there, he said. Went in, checked in, and said, orderly, come got him. Put him up on the gurney, rolled him into the checkout room, whatever it was, had the big light over you. Daddy was a tall man, had a big belly. Mama said it looked like a bay window. Said the oncologist come in. Said he looked at it and probed around. He didn't know what it was. His nurse looked at it. He asked her and said they discussed it. And said she didn't know, so they finally called another doctor in. I don't know if it was an oncologist or what it was. He came in, and Daddy said he looked. So ended up, it was a room full of them. It was orderly, and Daddy with his belly all under the light, and the oncologist, another doctor, and a nurse. And they milled around there, couldn't figure what it was. And Daddy and no orderly had hit it off. He was country as a butter bean. And finally, he couldn't stand no more. He said, y'all, that ain't nothing but a big old gray back wood tick. Just light a match and put it out and burn him with it. He'll back right out of there. And they did, and it backed out, and Daddy was cured. My mama, she said, I told him not to ever tell anybody about us going down here and having a tick in his belly. So Daddy came back home, no cancer.
You mean to tell me nobody looked at that closer before y'all made it all the way to an oncologist?
Daddy had it was sort of a tight fit now. He was way down in there deep. It was just a gray growth. Daddy was convinced he had a cancer in his belly button.
He was just a few days away from glory.
He thought he was fixing to move on. But it was a tick. But Mama didn't want it told anywhere, but Daddy always did as he pleased. And he told it on himself all over Winston County.
You were ready for an emotional roller coaster, and
yeah,
thankfully.
Yeah, Mama wouldn't approve of me telling that today, but, you know, it's been 40-something years. I'll just go ahead.
Let it go.
Yeah, now, let it go.
We've talked about deer, raccoons, possums, beaver on this show, but we've never talked about elk. And you said you got an elk story.
Me and my grandson, Robin's oldest boy, we were always tight. He went with me everywhere. But I had got in with some people and got to go into Colorado elk hunting. Well, I decided I'd take Jake with me, and we roughed it. stayed, hunted public land, stayed in tents, and carried horses. Well, I bought Jake a horse just for this trip. It was an old wore-out rope horse. But anyhow, we had a spring, I'd say a quarter of a mile down the hill from where we camped. We had about six or seven horses. And when we'd come back from the morning hunt, we'd take the horses down to the spring and water them. And some of them told Jake, said, Jake, round the horses up and take them down there and water them. And he got on his horse and got the others and carried them down there. Well, he had a 22 caliber pellet rifle he'd carried to shoot grouse or whatever you call them birds up there. There's a lot of them. He carried that with him. Well, he got down there, was watering the horses, and a game warden come up, drove up. And he said, son, what you doing? He said, I'm watering these horses for us. He says, what you doing with that gun? Game warden reached and got his gun. Got to look. It had a scope on it. He thought it was a high-powered rifle. He says, I got it to shoot snakes. He says, we ain't got no snakes up here. And it's high in the mountains. Jake said, well, I'm not from up here. Says, where I'm from, where there's a water hole, there's moccasins, bad snakes. And said, I got this gun to shoot snakes. Well, he said, he asked him, says, who you up here with? He said, my grandfather. He said, y'all camped up there? And he said, yeah, we camped up there. So he came up there, and he come straight to me. He said, are you Jake's grandfather? I said, yes, sir, I am. He said, has that boy got a small game license to have that gun? Jake had told him it was a pellet gun because he couldn't figure out how to load it. And I said, yes, sir, I have. And he said, let's see it. I had bought Jake an elk license. As long as you had a elk license that hadn't been used, you could hunt any small game or, you know, you was good to go. The game warden didn't know as much as he thought he knew.
You taught him something.
I taught him something.
I'll tell you, my son, if you want to get him to line up, you can tell him the police is coming. You can tell him the president's on the way. You can tell him. But if you ever tell him you can't do that or the game board is going to show up, straight-laced right then. They ain't a man he's more afraid of in this world than the green jeans.
Oh, yeah. Jake's got good reason to be afraid of the game wardens. If his tickets was stretched out on this table, they'd hang off the other end.
That's a reputation is what you call
it. And he ain't learned nothing yet. He gets that from his daddy.
Well, tell us about that S-10.
We went up to Missouri turkey hunting, and the seasons up there are a week long. You can kill one bird per season. Or two birds maximum. We went up there on about a Tuesday or Wednesday, and I killed a turkey the first morning. And Grunt, he took some youngin' with us, or something. Anyway, he didn't kill a turkey that morning. And the next morning we went, I didn't carry a gun. But Brian Lewis and I had gone out the evening before and roosted a turkey. We knew right where to go where one was. The turkey ended up just walking right up Grunt's gun barrel. He killed him. But we had got to following that. He didn't fly down in our laps. He flew down. We got to following him. We crossed two or three of them mountains. I'd hate to do it now, wouldn't you, Grunt?
Couldn't do it.
And we came out on the highway about 3 miles from the truck. And I told him, I said, look, give me the key. I'll go get the truck and come pick y'all up. So I left there trotting. And I got to give out pretty quick pulling in mine. And a purple S10 pickup truck pulled over and said, "You want to ride?" I said, "Man, yeah." I put my elbow up and I saw what my elbow was resting on. And it was something you don't need to be looking at. It was videos you don't need to look at. He said, "Hey, you want to go to the house and watch some of them things?" I said, "No, sir, you can let me out right here." He said, "No, let's go on to the house." I said, "Let me out right here." I didn't have a gun now. I had a pocket. I said, "Man, I cut you deep and wide."
Four ways and continuous.
And
he said, "No, we're going to go to the house and watch some of them things." I decided right then I was going to go down fighting. I opened the door. He slowed down to make a curve. I bailed out that S10. I left it with him. Went over there and got Grunt's truck, run in there and picked him up. Said, give me a gun. I'm still looking for that purple S10.
Oh, man.
It may be a good thing I didn't find it, but. That's back when I was young. He
and handsome.
Obviously.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember
you being handsome. That's what I thought. I remember that.
I don't remember that.
I made it up. I didn't know you then. I just threw it in there.
We couldn't plan this if we tried to. But Heavy has a clothesline story too.
My grandparents raised me most of my life, and we lived 16 miles out of town, and we had everything we needed, but there wasn't no waste. And I grew up, I was still a small boy, maybe in the third grade, but I'd always loved my hero shot rifles. Cowboys, soldiers, Indians, whatever, they shot rifles. And my granddaddy and my uncle loved to shoot a rifle. Granddaddy done got too old, but they had several guns in the house, but one of them was an old single-shot Winchester. It'd shoot short, long, or long rifle 22s. He used it every year for killing hogs, and that was one of my first guns. And my uncle lived there, too. He was probably 31, 32 years old at the time, avid outdoorsman. He would buy me a box of shorts all along, 22 shorts. I think it was a quarter or 30 cents a box back then. And he encouraged me to shoot, but not towards your road or around nobody or anything like that. And I had enough gumption not to do that, but I'd stalk the fence rows around the cotton patch, shoot them big old field rats. Or every once in a while, I'd catch a dove sitting up on a cotton stalk or a rabbit that thinks he's hid. You know, country boy walking and shooting about third, fourth grade, I guess. Well, it was a hot summertime, and there wasn't much to hunt. And I got to looking at my grandma's clothesline. Now, she probably had 50 or 60 foot of lines, and there was three of them with about 2 or 3 foot space between them so she could hang up a lot of clothes. She took pride in her clothesline. If they were sagging just a little bit, she put her a stick or something under it to prop it up. Well, these old big dragonflies, we used to call them snake doctors, but dragonflies, they were bad to land on that wire. And I got to looking at them one day, and there was a cedar tree right behind our pump house. I said, "I believe I can hit one of them things." Well, I got over there and took me a rest on that cedar tree. Oh, a little further from here to the edge of the porch. And I hit that first, and I was addicted then. Every day I looked forward to shooting snake doctors. My grandma had told me, "You shoot my clothesline too, I'm going to kill you, boy." Of course, I knew she weren't going to really kill me, and I was good enough shot, I wasn't going to hit your clothesline. But one day, It's a big old horse fly. That thing's big as the end of my thumb. He flew up there and lit, and I thought, boy, that's going to be something to see when I bust him open. Mule blood come out of him. I took me a careful rest, and when I touched her off, I heard, pew! I'd shot just a hair low and cut the clothesline in two. And I don't know where she come from. She had to be watching me, but I didn't see her. That old woman bail out of that house. You little devil, you have shot my clothes. Come in to me. And at 60 years old, Grandma could catch chicken. You know, she was a tough old country woman. I figured I better go on to her. And so she wasn't going to forget about it. That was for sure. So she gave me one of her thrashings. Looking back now, it was more scary than it was painful, but I got the message.
You didn't look none of that up on the internet, did you?
It wasn't no such thing then. Just a few people had telephones out there. Anyhow, my uncle come in from work, and she told him, says, get out there and fix my clothesline. That young'un shot it in two. If you hadn't bought him in bullets and egged him on, he wouldn't have done it. All right, Mama. All right, Mama. He got out there. He's already dog tired and fixed the clothesline. And he told me, he didn't say quit shooting. Don't you be shooting that clothesline in two no more. That's all he said. So I took that to mean if you're willing to risk the beating, you can keep shooting. I stood it long as I could. Then one day I seen a row of dragonflies, snake doctors on it. And I went out there and I shot me one or two. And I was taking pains. If I missed him, I was going to miss him high. I wasn't going to shoot under him and hit that pretty clothesline wire. As luck would have it, a great old big horse fly flew up there and lit. And I got over there, and I was fixing to shoot that thing. And I heard my granddaddy say, wait, Mike. I looked around. He said, you know, he called my grandma, my mammy. He said, you know what, your mammy is going to tear you up if you shoot that thing in two again. Said, "You are you willing to risk it? Well, I had to think about it just a minute. He said, I ain't going to tell you don't. I'm not telling you that. I just want to know if you hard-headed, bull-headed enough that you won't try it again. I think I will. I shot that darn line in two again. I left the house running. She was going to have to wait to flog me that time. I figured my uncle would want some of me, too, because I had missed and cut that clothesline. I don't know that there is a moral to that story. But right before dark, my uncle come over there. He knew where I was hid out. I had me a little fort where I kept my head, cigarettes, and other stuff I'd pilfered from him, fishing lures. If he couldn't find it, he knew where to look. He said, come on in. Come on to the house. I said, she's still mad. He cussed somewhat. And he said, what do you think? Do you reckon she's still mad? He said, "You come on, take your whooping now. You can't stay out here all night." So I went on back, and she got me. And I didn't do it no more. I didn't quit shooting, but I stayed away from that clothesline. I dreaded it like the plague when I had that little rifle in my hand. One other thing, and this was luck. I wasn't that good. I walked outside with my little gun in my hand one cold Saturday morning. My uncle's out there doing something, maybe dipping his dogs or deer dogs or tattooing their ears or something. And there's old Hawk flying around. We had chickens, but I don't think he'd brave enough to try that. But my uncle said, shoot that hawk, boy. I throwed up and got out there and aimed at his head. He was flying us, led him a little bit and shot. I had no idea I'd hit that thing. He folded up and come down. And I acted like I meant to, like it wasn't nothing to it. And I'll admit it was luck.
In certain company, it was an absolute accident. We don't know how that happened.
Yeah. Green Jeans.
Mr. Green Jeans, it's an accident.
I don't think it's illegal to kill them things in. People used to put steel traps on top of fence posts.
Daddy did that.
Oh, that's something that's evolved.
Them and owls both. Anything catch chicken, you kill it.
All right, Mr. David, we've been all over the hunting world, and I've been getting a little bit hungry. And you said you got one about tuna salad, and boy, ain't nothing better than tuna salad on a
tuna fish
good,
salad.
Cool day.
Uncle Victor had a daughter that was grown. She's at a 50. She was a great cook, and she would come out every day. She did the grocery shopping for them, and she did the cooking for them, and she'd leave them a little something for supper. And one day, they had tuna fish salad for lunch. She served it and asked Uncle Victor how he liked it. And Uncle Victor said he liked that tuna fish salad fine, but it had a whang to it. And you Alabama boys know what a whang. It was good, but it was just had a whang to it. She asked her brother Fred, and he said the same thing. He said it was good, but it had a whang to it. Well, they talked about it enough. It sort of insulted her. She's a great cook. And she stepped into the round to the pantry there, and I saw them myself the next day. And she brought them out. She had a stack of those flat cans. And you could see tuna. And she walked in there. It said, tuna flavored cat food. Oh. And she had made that kitty cat tuna salad. And the point is, that had been just like that flavor combination. That would have been just right with those outhouse tomatoes. You could have put those outhouse tomatoes right on it. Kitty cat tuna fish salad. And you'd have had you a good country meal right there. But I think all that went to the... I think it went to the slot bucket.
David, you said it had a wang to it.
A wang.
That's the understatement of the show so far, is that it had a wang to it.
I had to burn that old house down this week. The roof had fallen in, and right before I burned it, the last place I went in the kitchen and looked in that cabinet, and I told a friend that was with me, I said, that's where the tuna fish was stacked right there the last time I saw it. Tuna fish, kitty cat salad. Whew. Y'all won't want to ever eat with any of my people anymore.
I was just thinking. I need a list of names and addresses of where to stay away from. Now, Grunt, you mentioned that Robin gets to tell a lot of his own stories, but rarely do other people get to tell stories on Mr. Robin. So he gets to craft them however he wants to, but now you fixing to tell one how you want to about him.
I don't know if I'd like you.
Yes. A true encounter. Well, several years ago, it's been several years back, me and Robin got in on a lease in Tennessee. We leased a farm. We was going to go up our turkey hunting. So Robin had to preach Sunday night. And it was 10, 11 o'clock before we got off. And we got up there about 2 o'clock in the morning and just pulled out in the pasture in my old truck. And Jake was with us, Robin's son, and they got in the back of the truck, and I got in the front, lay down, try to get a little nap. By the time we got our shoes off and laid down, a darn turkey gobbled. I mean, he gobbled loud and strong over on the side of the mountain. We commenced to put boots on in the middle of the night, boots on, get ready, and we went over and sat down with our back to the mountain, to the woods, and the field in front of us. Knew he was going to fly down in that field. Well, we sat there, and it got to getting light. We sat there a couple of hours. Anyhow, the turkeys flew down to the north of us. They flew down in the woods. And it was windy that morning. It was bad windy. And they went away from us. Anyhow, we slipped around and we seen them. They was crossing a saddle between two mountains. The hens was first and the big old gobbler coming up last. And I told Robin, I said, let's wait and let them get in the woods and we'll take off and get behind them. Wasn't no calling. We died and blowed the reeds out of the call. Wasn't no calling them back. Anyhow, that's what we did. And when I eased up over the hill, get in the woods, there he was, about 30 yards, puffed up, old tail fanned out, had his butt to us. He was following the hens. So I throwed my gun up. Robin said, wait a minute. Let me get up there close by you. Mm-hmm. I said, all right. He's bad about that. Mm-hmm. He got up there and he says, let's 1, 2, 3. He's bad about that. He done got me in on that on several times. I said, okay. I said, I'm going to count. Well, I said, 1. And when I said 2, I pulled the trigger. Down he went to flopping. Well, Robin shot 2. So I just stood there, and he took off up there running. I says, Robin, is he a good turkey? He said, as good a one as I've ever killed.
I believe that to be 100% truth.
Oh, it is true. It's factual. Down to every detail. It's factual.
He killed every duck in Arkansas.
Never one.
Yeah, not one person. Not a dozen. Seven other guns in the blind, and nobody hit besides him.
I saw him shoot one time, killed 3. One shell.
That's what I was aiming at.
That's right.
That's a whole idea of shooting at them. Kill them, ain't it, Robin?
Yeah.
When I was in the 9th grade, I was going to Neshoba Central. It was a consolidated community schools, the county schools. Country kids went there, city schools went to Philadelphia. Well, back then you had breaks and recesses. And down at the junior high and high school, we had some soft drink machines under the arcade. Some of them were slightly damaged. Now, we had one that you could short punch with your fist and get a free drink out of it if you knew right where to hit it, and some of us did. But we had another one that would shock the devil out of you if you touched it. Well, we all got zapped one time, and then we figured out that you could grab somebody else and grab that machine, and it would shock them. We had to do a couple of other kids, ones that couldn't whoop us. We didn't try it on any of the other boys or girls, but when you grabbed them, it'd shock them and make a popping sound. They'd holler and jump. Might have got our jaws slapped a time or two, but anyhow, we had an assistant principal. I'm going to go on and use his name, Mr. Leland Harrison. One of the finest men I've ever known in my life. He was the assistant principal. He had been a coach. He worked his way up. He was decorated in Korea. Just a decent doesn't do him justice. If it hadn't been for him, I might not have went as far in school as I did. Anyhow, he saw something in me when the rest of the teachers didn't. So there was 3 or 4 of us devils standing around that shocking machine. Everybody done got wise to us. They was like old chickens or something, scared. They wouldn't. Now, the older boys just get out of the way. You know, we knew better to shock them. But we called him Coach Harrison. He had been down by the gym and the shop, and he was coming back up to the office. And he was a big, powerful man. He wasn't over 6 foot, but he just had big old strong arms and legs, neck, just much of a man. Well, he had on his white short sleeve shirt and his khaki breeches like he wore about every day. And he looked over there and seen us, and he had had to discipline all of us, but he liked us too. What you outlaws doing? He come over there talking to us, and I was waiting for him to get close enough. I grabbed him by the forearm and grabbed that machine. He was sweaty. Pow! He hollered, but then he grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and says, come on here, boy. He took me up there to that office, bent over there, took that board, and I could have screamed he was hurting me so bad. My face was probably red as a big old tomato. And when he quit, I could still feel tingles running up my neck and just, like cried. But he said, Mike, you knew I was going to bring you back up here and beat the devil out of you for that. And you went on and done it anyway. He said, is there something wrong with you? I said, Coach Harrison, it is worth it to hear you holler. He said, go on to class. Try to stay out of trouble. I don't want to mess with you no more today.
When you said there was a few of them damaged in there, I thought he was talking about boys.
Well, yeah, talking about that too. That too. Yeah.
I think it was dual meaning.
Let's jump into scripture time. We're going to be in Ephesians again, chapter 5. And I'm only going to read this one part, verse 5.
You're going to take your hat off what you're going to do.
I get so focused on what I want to do. But you know what? I'm thankful that you're here. I'm glad you're here, buddy. All right, Ephesians 5, 4. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. Is that tough?
Do we need to read that?
Well, I think it's a really good thing to read during the show because it's important to God how we talk. It's important to God how the words that we use, when we use them in different things. And we tell a lot of stories. And oftentimes, what is used to make a story more funny? Those colorful words. Now, these words here, and I'm going to be careful because I know we have kids that watch, but they're in the realm of sexuality. Dirty jokes, different things like that. And Paul is writing. I said, you ain't going to talk like that no more. That's your old man. Your new man needs to use wholesome words. And I think there's five don'ts and one do. And the one do that you can use as much as you want is thanksgiving. You can be as thankful as you can possibly be. And that's what he says. And that's what y'all got to thinking about that. How many times have I ever gotten in trouble in this life by being thankful?
I can tell you a Bible story where folks got in trouble for not being thankful.
there's a lot of examples on that side. Yeah.
Saddest verse in the Bible, Jesus asked, where were the nine? One Samaritan came back and said, thank you. Mm. He healed 10. Nine of them didn't. He asked, where are the nine?
Well, what about Lot's wife? All she had to do was just keep going. Don't look back. Have faith. I'm going to escape. And she couldn't stand it. She had to turn around and look back.
Wasn't thankful.
Mm-mm. I wasn't thankful for her ability to escape.
To escape a situation she wasn't supposed to be escaping anyway. Well, that's just something to think about as you move through your week, because in the world that we live in today, we're inundated from the TV shows, movies, everything is as vulgar as it can be. It's the more cuss words, I think it's the better and the better and the better. But that's one thing we try not to do here on the show on purpose. We try not to use this filthy talk and different things on purpose because we feel like that the Bible clearly says not to, and we feel like that there's a real pocket of people out there that would like to have something that they can watch and not have to hear it.
There's no place for it in God's kingdom.
Well, I don't think you're going to hear it in heaven.
You're not going to hear it in heaven. Mm. If you're a child of God, you're not going to speak it. Mm. I mean, that's just the way it is. And you can get the point across, like the movies you see now on TV. You know, when I was coming up, nothing compared to what's today. Mm. You got the vulgarest talk there is, and it could have just as easily be left out.
That's right.
Just as easily.
Well, we're going to end on a word. We're going to end on the word game, one round. We're not going to do the 60-second story today because we're a little pressed for time. We're just going to try to make a sentence. Mr. David, you'll start it. Start us with a noun, a pronoun, I, you, me, whatever. And then you're going to do the next word, usually a verb, like I ran to the store. And we're going to go, and you got 2 seconds to come up with your word. And if you mess the 2 seconds up, you lose. Or if you can't come up with a word, you lose.
I'm just glad he told me what a pronoun was.
Pronoun, yeah. I, you, me, we, she. Let's try it. I think this may be the most interesting one we've ever had. David, kick us off.
Thank you.
We.
There it is.
Do I win?
You, well, we all, everybody but Grunt win.
Tell us why
me and I lose.
You lose, Mr. Grunt.
Had a stroke last week, too, didn't you? Yeah, I got a good excuse. I had a stroke last week. really did.
Maybe you won. I don't know. I'm not sure.
He's here.
Yeah, you're here, so maybe you won.
Just oh, I won.
Just the shortest one.
I think
you go ahead.
Say it again.
We got together. Can you give me a little time?
Had a storytelling in Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Boy, ate a biscuit.
Period. Exclamation mark.
And drank a cup of coffee.
Amen. Well, fellas, we've enjoyed it.
I knew
it
wasn't gonna work.
But it's okay because it was good. It blessed my heart. Well, we drove over here this morning. I'm glad we did. Mm-hmm. And we've had good hospitality here and good storytelling, good fellowship.
What else could you ask?
Well, all right. Well, that's going to do it this week at the Hayden Outbound Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm David.
I'm Grant. I'm Robin.
I'm Ed.
We'll see you next week.